Books on Tape presents What Just Happened? A Chronicle from the Information Frontier by James Gleick. Read by Dan Cashman. Introduction. The last decade of the 20th century came as a surprise. Of course, we knew we had personal computers everywhere, suddenly. We knew we had a worldwide telephone network deploying vines and tendrils to every corner of the earth. We did not see that these facts, the computer and the network, were already a dyad. They were conjoining to make something greater. Many people were beginning to believe, once again, as their grandparents had when the century opened, that technology had the power to change life for the better. Not that fear and loathing altogether subsided. Indeed, as the calendar wound toward a number with three zeros, we sometimes gave in to apocalyptic thoughts. Even in our calmest moments, our computers and our telephones inspired as much frustration as pleasure. Sophisticated as the public was, it mocked George Bush, the elder, for his wonderment at the sight of a supermarket checkout scanner in 1992. He didn't care much about the Internet either, nor, for that matter, did the brilliant young entrepreneurs at Microsoft. In that year, the number of Internet nodes passed 1 million. The next year, the new president, Bill Clinton, acquired an email address at whitehouse.gov. But few people knew these things. Mainstream newspapers would not print that obscure term, Internet, without adding an explanatory phrase like, Global Network of Computers and Their Interconnections. I know, because from time to time I tried to use the word in the New York Times. 1 year later, everything was different. Something like this happened at the end of the previous century. A shift in the world's size and topology. When the new technologies of electricity and the telephone began to penetrate everyday life, people were amazed, confused, awestruck. And then, almost as rapidly, cured of their surprise. In the 1890s, only a tiny fraction of the wealthiest and most futuristic Americans actually had electricity flowing to their homes. And their typical appliance inventory comprised a single incandescent light. They often had to unscrew the bulb if they wanted to plug in something else. Wall outlets would come along eventually. Pioneers like General Electric and Western Electric and Westinghouse Electric already promoted a complex wired lifestyle, organized around the electric coffee pot, 1891, the electric fan, 1893, corn popper, 1909, cigar lighter, 1911, and alarm clock, 1915. The Bell telephone companies, meanwhile, were encouraging women to consider shopping by telephone, electronic commerce. At the turn of the century, even in California, which led the nation in telephone density, penetration had only reached about 6 households per 100. But those new identifying coordinates, telephone numbers, were beginning to appear in advertisements and business cards. The word spread quickly. After all, communications form the essence of this makeover of the landscape. People who were, 1 year, discomposed by the act of shouting hello into a small mouthpiece became in the next year experts on the changing social patterns of their own lives. Loneliness, both urban and rural, was to be banished. In emergencies, help was only a phone call away. Time and space were annihilated, people said, and Einstein was just a teenager. Of course, another technological surprise was rolling around the corner. The social historian Claude Fisher found this shocked headline in an Antioch, California newspaper from 1906. Many deaths due to devil wagon. Dead and unconscious forms left in wake of speeding automobiles operated by reckless chauffeurs. So, if we sometimes found ourselves in the 1990s alternating between shock and wonder, we weren't the first. We didn't quite see cyberspace until we got there. Then again, our ancestors had glimpsed it 100 years earlier. The news of the world is gathered from its four corners in less than a second's time, declared the president of the National Electric Light Association in 1896. And he was describing his present, not our future. The softest whisper of the human voice is transmitted 1,000 leagues. Night is turned into day, darkness into light. The waste forces of nature are harnessed and wafted like spirits, unseen and instantaneously over mountains and rivers, miles upon miles. In reality, these transformations were far slower than they seemed. The diffusion of innovation took decades, where now we think in terms of years. For both electricity and the telephone, roughly a half century passed in the United States between commercial introduction and something resembling true ubiquity. Consumers of technology learn to be nimbler now, to skip lightly across the years, to pass with barely a tremor from vinyl to CD, from punch card to micro drive. So, I ask the reader, savvy as you are, to enter a time tunnel. Transport yourself back to the crepuscular past of the 1990s. We citizens of the 21st century have learned a few things, discarding our previous quaint mindsets as snakes shed their skins. But we don't get away altogether clean. When the decade began, I had been a science reporter, mostly. I was working to finish a biography of Richard Feynman, succumbing to a classic form of writer's avoidance. I became more interested than was altogether healthy in one of my professional tools, my word processor. An adventure ensued. It is recounted in the opening essay, Chasing Bugs in the Electronic Village. Apparently, the Electronic Village is where I located myself in 1992, in a permanent floating conversation, a new culture in formation. Several of the themes that thread through this volume begin here. The problem of the software defect, the problem of the word bug, for that matter, the problem of Microsoft, and the problem of user angst. Now and again, I expect the reader to be brought up short, as I am, rereading my words. How outlandish the past was. Was the dominant word processor really a thing called Word Perfect, made by a large, successful company called Word Perfect? How strange to recall a relatively small number of personal computer users use Windows. Someone spending time with scientists at the universities and government laboratories could hardly fail to notice their fondness for a new medium of communication. They exchanged letters electronically without paper. They sent one another mail, and the U.S. Postal Service was nowhere involved. This was no trivial business. It was shaking the fundamental structure of scientific communication. The grand refereed journals were not going to go out of business overnight, but more and more the real work of science, at least the real news of science, transpired via electronic preprints. Occasionally, a scientist would ask me, collegially, for my email address. I was embarrassed. Where on the internet was I? I had wires coming into my house, transporting data, bidirectionally, kilobits at a time. It was analog data. And those wires had been there since approximately the time of Alexander Graham Bell. But I had a modem, a fast 1200 baud modem. I understood the meaning of bandwidth. I felt I should be able to connect to the internet somehow, if I could just find it. This thing, this place, this entity. A year later, I was researching an article called The Telephone Transformed into Almost Everything. We see now that this belonged to the time-honored journalistic genre. Something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. I was trying to grasp.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?